I'm Jackson, W266, DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
I'm Monica Ricks in New York. Alex Murdaugh's murder trial is now in the hands of a jury in South Carolina following 2 days of closing arguments. Prosecutors say Murdaugh killed his wife and son to cover up drug and financial problems.
They blame everybody but Alex. Everybody but Alex.
But defense attorney Jim Griffin says prosecutors are so determined to convict Murdaugh, they lied about evidence.
That is their theory of the case. And if you don't accept that, beyond a reasonable doubt, ladies and gentlemen, I submit the verdict has to be not guilty.
Murdaugh faces 30 years to life in prison. The Justice Department says former President Trump can be sued by Capitol Police officers and lawmakers injured on January 6, despite Trump's immunity claims. Legal analyst Lori Levinson.
It might be hard for the court to draw lines now as to when the president's actions would cross into liable conduct. But saying that a president can do whatever he wants and not face legal consequences, at least a lawsuit, would be an extreme ruling by the court. And I think the court's aware of that.
President Biden says he will not allow D.C. to lower penalties for some violent crimes.
The White House says the president viewed the D.C. law as unacceptable.
Lowering penalties for carjacking, he doesn't believe that's going to keep our community safe.
Still, Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre insists.
The president still thinks that D.C. should become the 51st state.
Statehood advocates are furious at Mr. Biden. Statehood opponents say the episode proves their case, that the D.C. Council should not be given the power of a state legislature. Stephen Portnoy, CBS News, The White House.
Senator Dianne Feinstein has been admitted to a hospital in California now to get treatment for shingles. The 89-year-old was diagnosed with the virus late last month and is expected to make a full recovery. Shingles is a painful rash that usually develops in older adults who've had chickenpox. Spring forward, fall back, Congress could scrap it all.
This is the latest attempt to make daylight saving time permanent. It's called the Sunshine Protection Act. GOP Senator Marco Rubio introduced the bill. Democrat Ed Markey is a co-sponsor. A similar proposal died in the House last year after being approved by the Senate. The main opposition comes from farmers who find daylight saving time counterproductive.
That's CBS's Steve Futterman.
And liftoff, a crew pick. Go Dragon, go Falcon.
Four astronauts will arrive at the International Space Station tomorrow after a successful SpaceX launch this morning in Florida. This is CBS News.
Nobody should have to pay for one-size-fits-all insurance coverage. Liberty Mutual customizes your car and home insurance so you only pay for what you need. Liberty Mutual Insurance.
A progressive voice for rural Wisconsin. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at WAUKradio.com.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. Republicans say they have to be careful with Wisconsin's $7 billion budget surplus. Senator Howard Markwine says the surplus is made up of a lot of one-time money.
This two-year budget with all that one-time cash there, you know, anybody could put that budget together, I think. It's going to be to do it in a manner that is sustainable well into the future.
Mark Lang tells WisPolitics.com the state will have to increase pay for state workers to stay competitive and keep up with inflation. Assembly Speaker Robin Moss says he's considering proposing tolls to Wisconsin interstates to pay for road construction and maintenance. The idea of tollways in Wisconsin has been bandied about for years but hasn't found much support. In sports, the Bucks beat Orlando last night for their 16th win in a row. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Hey everybody, how we doing? I'm Charlie Behrens, inviting you to join me Saturdays and or Sundays at noon. It's a horse apiece, whatever you decide. We're doing the Cripes Cast, where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and it's more fun than a six-pack of Jolly Good. Okay, the pride of Random Lake, that Jolly Good is. Anyway, it's on your Civic Media station and the Civic Media app. And do me a favor, yeah, tell your folks I says hi. Okay, real good.
Heat, power, and water are things people cannot take for granted. the elderly, disabled, the veterans. With record increases in basic costs of living, people are struggling to keep these services on and their bills paid. If you are in danger of losing heat, power, or water, call 1-800-506-5596 or apply online at heat.help. You may not ask for it, but the Keep Wisconsin Warm Cool Fund and your local energy assistance providers are here to help.
You've got questions about navigating the healthcare system? Kristen Lyerly helps us find answers and discusses other issues at the intersection of healthcare and politics. Hometown Health, Thursday mornings at 7:30 on Up North News Radio.
Look through your children's eyes, and you will discover the true magic of a forest.
Find a forest near you and start exploring at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
The Shaw 101 FM, Franklin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com. Bringing some sanity to the airwaves. The Shaw 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
Welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. Railway Safety Act of 2023 hath been proposed. Sherrod Brown, very happy to see Sherrod, one of my favorite senators from Ohio there, putting forth this. Interestingly enough, J.D. Vance also signing on. More of a political thing, I got to think. But hey, maybe there's hope. You know, maybe all of the right-wingery, maybe all of the ideological stuff that he talks about believing, maybe not so hard-sold. It's been interesting, however, watching some of the Republicans in the House who made such a big deal out of what happened in East Palestine and wanting to put it at the feet of Pete Buttigieg and the administration, kind of going, whoa, too soon. No, not too soon. Now is the time to be moving while the iron is hot and while people are paying attention. And it's interesting, you know, I was spending a little time on the right-wing media circuit today. Interestingly enough, not a lot about the derailment. It seems like the cash is being spread around to shut up. And you know, move on, move it along, nothing to see here, move it along. Next, because the daily outrage today was what they tried to manufacture is, you know, Biden did a little kind of, you know, like chuckle kind of laugh. That he was laughing at Marjorie Taylor Greene over her attempt. And if you remember yesterday, we talked about, you know, how she used this poor woman and her horribly tragic story of two dead kids who died from Percocet laced with fentanyl in 2020. And then tried to point it at Biden saying, you know, Biden isn't doing anything. And the reason that you know, these kids are dead is Joe Biden. And it's kind of what this woman was saying as well, which is really kind of twisted in a way. But they really tried to make a, that's what the right-wing radio and the right-wing media were really pushing heavily. You know, how dare Joe Biden laugh? He needs to apologize right now. And it didn't take because everyone saw it for what it was. It's today's outrage candy to get us to forget about yesterday. Now, this rail thing, this has got to stay. This is an important moment. This is one of those learning moments. And I look at the legislation that Vance has signed onto, as has Marco Rubio and Josh Hawley. So there is an opportunity here, possibly. Now, again, you've got a Republican-led House with some bomb throwers who, you know, they wanted to be the champions of those rural folk who, you know, that's their folk. Remember, This legislation's got some interesting stuff on it. It addresses some of the key regulatory questions that we've talked about for quite some time, you know, crew sizes and that. You know, one of the big ones being, you know, the reporting of hazardous material. This is one of those things where it has to be a certain, a massive amount. This is them going, we need to tighten those restrictions. We need to tighten this stuff right now. And, you know, and address some of the real widespread operational changes that have happened right under the nose of regulators and, well, with the lack of regulation and the understaffing of the regulators that are there, need to address it. You know, and they said, look, it's been the past 6 years where you've seen this precision scheduled railroading come into place where it's, hey, you working people, you're just going to have to do more with a lot less. And from what we've talked to, and we've talked to a number of union leaders on this over the last several months, you know, they've cut the workforce by a third, you know, during this span of just, you know, like a decade. And you now have, you know, these crews that are just, they're burnt out. They're a lot smaller than they have been in the past. And with this being on call 24/7, 365, again, remember the fight over the summer of sick days and time off, but also the safety part of this, the on-call part that everyone has forgotten about. This is not a lifestyle of someone you want in charge of these massive trains that have just grown longer and heavier. Now, what the U.S. Department of Transportation is under this legislation, what it will do is get the U.S. Department of Transportation to revisit some of the rules on train size, on the weight, help, you know. One of the interviews I did, you know, a couple of weeks ago, the guy, it blew my mind because I'm going, no, they're not really doing this. They're loading the train for convenience, not for balance. You know, anyone knows who, you know, who's either driven, you know, a truck or, you know, something that's, you're pulling a bunch of things behind you. You want the heaviness, you want the heaviest parts right against the braking system. So if you're driving, you know, a train, you want the heaviest car right behind the engine and then the second heaviest car behind that and third, and you want your empties and your lighter stuff at the back end of it. Because you don't want, as you're slamming on the brakes, all of that inertia, all of that momentum come crushing down on you. Evidently, we don't do that. We put heavy stuff on the back end. Because when things derail, what the heck? Let it go even worse. They're going to revisit some of this because trains have gotten, you know, 2-3 miles long. And this is them going, you know, maybe we should be, I don't know, maybe looking at this. Maybe looking also at the fact, like I said a moment ago, the fact that you've cut the number of crews, you've cut the number of mechanics, you've cut down the number of locomotives, you cut down all of the costs. Because again, this stuff costs money. That's profit. Also, what this legislation would do, this Railway Safety Act of 2023, and I think it's a good start. I don't know that it's enough. But it's going to increase the fine that the federal government can fine these railroads from $225,000. So this calamity in East Palestine, the maximum fine for the most egregious violations possible, you know, even if they deliberately did it, would be $225,000. That'd be the fine. They're now saying they're gonna jack that up to 1%. Of the annual operating income, which could be, you know, tens of millions of dollars. Personally, I think that should be a sliding scale from 1 to 10. But 1% is a huge jump. And I think that's a big part of this. Now, also in this bill is there are these detection devices that, you know, when hazardous material is going down the tracks, it's supposed to, these detection devices are supposed to, you know, detect heat and detect, you know, all these different things that they're checking for every 10 miles when there's hazmat on the trains. This one was checked, I guess, every 20 miles. And there's some talk, and I haven't seen this in the NTSB report, but there's some talk that, well, maybe they didn't actually check them. And they're not mandatory. And you don't know if they actually, all of them work or not. This is regulators going, this is not going to be the law. you're now going to have to put this in place. Every 10 miles, you're going to have these sensors for when this happens. And there's going to have to be some reporting that goes on to it and a system in place to make sure that the people are held accountable. And you can't just go, yeah, it's going off, but that's no big deal. Because the other part of this, and this is the part that just blows my mind, that even when these sensors go off, and even when, you know, all of the machinery is going, you know, danger, Will Robinson, there's someone in a booth somewhere, you know, off track going, ah, don't worry about it. I stop and I think about this as someone, again, who's driven a truck for an awful lot of miles, you know, thinking in my head that if the dispatcher was calling me going, you know what, we know the check engine light's on. We know that it's overheating. We know that, you know, all this stuff's going on with the truck, but don't worry about it. Just plow right on through. Yeah, we know your brakes are on fire and there's flames shooting out of the sides, which has happened a couple of times. Don't worry about it. Just keep going. I'm not quite sure how I'd react to that, but this is kind of what goes on. So look, I'm thrilled to see that there's some legislation that's potentially moving in that direction. Also, we had talked about with one of the union guys the fact that in the old days, you used to have a couple of minutes. I think he said 3 minutes to inspect a rail car. You have 3 minutes. I don't know how you inspect a rail car in 3 minutes. I have no idea. But it's down to like 45 seconds. If at all, you know, 30 to 45 seconds, you can't even read the numbers off of a train in 30 to 45 seconds, in my view. But this is where they are. They're now going to set some standards. And this, again, is a good thing. This is why you have regulations. Because clearly, these folks are not going to do it on their own. Clearly, they're not. And I know we're hearing the industry whining and complaining. No, you should only regulate bearings. How about we regulate the fact that there should have been someone, you know, paying attention to, well, the temperature of this stuff. There should be the sensors in place. We've got all this technology. Oh, and also the other thing is they're going to mandate at least a 2-person crew. That is important. I wish it'd be 3. Because again, what my problem with this is you have all of this dependence on technology and you don't have that kind of, that knowledge of the rails. That kind of knowledge of the road and understanding what things feel like. And this is where I'm in this kind of weird spot. Because yeah, I want the technology there, but it should be as an assistance, not as what this is what the industry wants, as the only way to go. So I have no faith that this is going to pass, because Republicans in the House are losing their minds. And I would imagine some in the Senate, because we can't regulate, because also they're spending lots of money, the rail industry, because we don't want this. I do find it interesting, though, that J.D. Vance, now this could be just he's the senator from Ohio. This is, you know, what he has to do to save face, knowing it's never going to pass. But he's got to throw it out there. He's pitching this a PPP-like program, the Paycheck Protection Program that we saw during the pandemic, that my friend Sarah Nelson did an incredible job for the airline workers, ensuring that they were made whole during the pandemic, that they remained attached to their jobs, that the paychecks kept coming, that you know people were okay. He's pitching this for the people of East Palestine and the businesses, and I'm going, look, this is a good idea. I think it's important. But I find it interesting that people who tell us that they don't believe government should do anything, can't do anything, should stay out of people's lives, are the first ones to come forward and go, bail us out. I mean, because if their ideology were actually what they believed, if they actually believed what they say they believed, they would be going after Norfolk Southern to make these people whole to the tune of billions of dollars. That's what should happen. Norfolk Southern should be paying every person that had to be evacuated their full salary. They should be paying every bit of the cleanup, every bit of the monitoring, every red cent that's been lost because of this. Because it's because of their actions that this happened. And if you were to do that, I'll bet you they'd be a whole lot more careful. Just my thoughts. Want to hear yours? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Have the talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, did you know Crazy Pack's going on? Yeah, CPAC is going on, what is billed as the most influential and largest gathering of conservatives in the world. It's returning to the Northeast. I guess Maryland is the Northeast. The Gaylord National Resort and Convention Center in National Harbor, Maryland. This big confab of no one. Because if you've noticed, lots of empty seats. The hashtag that's been trending the most out of CPAC, empty seats. And it's not what it was. Look, Crazy Pack used to be where everyone came. And now it's like a ghost town. And, there's some who are going, is this the breakup of the Republican Party? Is this now where the battle lines have been drawn? Because you got DeSantis and others and Pence and a bunch of other ones who aren't going. And it's kind of like, well, if Trump's going to be there, I'm not going to be there. Now, I found it interesting that Trump tried to explain why everyone else is avoiding CPAC. He truthed. On his Truth Social, the only reason certain candidates won't be going to CPAC is because the crowds have no interest in anything they have to say. They've heard it all before and don't want to hear it again. But my speech on Saturday night is already a sold-out monster. They are trying to expand the room and space. It's basically, they all know everyone wants to see me because I'm wonderful, because I have all the best words and I have the best tie, and I'm going to hug the flag again. And is there going to be a giant gold thing of me again? And that was my first question when Crazy Pack came on. Will they bring out that giant golden Trump again? The one that was made in Mexico where everyone was taking pictures with. It was one of those things where, again, CPAC's full of, crazy right-wing ideologues at this point. I remember when that it looked like a little keychain doll that they blew up. But I remember going, these are a bunch of religious zealots. These are a bunch of, extreme religious people who don't know that those 10 rules they want splashed everywhere. That idolatry thing. That false gods thing, it was one of those moments where we were going, yeah, this is a bit, I don't know. I think it's borderline. I think you probably should get a ruling. But look, this is the weird thing. CPAC used to be the ideological heart and soul of conservatism. It used to be a place where ideas happened. It used to be a place where you could go and debate with people and discuss things, and there was actual ideas. There are none anymore. This is all now just a pageant. This is like, you know, this is like Miss America for ugly people, for ugly old white people. And the weird thing is, I enjoyed going to CPAC. I went a couple of years, number of years ago, and this is well before Trump. It would have been like 11, like 10, 11, I think it was. And had a good time there. Had interesting conversations with people. You had your kooks, but you could have a conversation with kooks. And they were fun kooks. It was the Michelle Bachmann era of, you know, I miss Michelle Bachmann. I mean, she was a lunatic. I mean, she was way out on the fringe, but she was crazy fun. This iteration of CPAC folk, well, wow. And I guess that shows in the number of empty seats that they had there. Now I'm looking at the you know, Trump going, you know, my speech is sold out, and you got to wonder, you know, how many did his pack buy. And this is the weird thing. I look at the DeSantis book, the fastest book ever to sell in the history of books. How many did your pack buy? And you're going to give them out to our friends or anyone who will take them and throw them away. I mean, it's we live in this projection era where, you know, everything I see coming out of CPAC now is just plain weird. And again, no ideas, no way to move forward, no ideas on how to bring us back together. Because true conservatives, and this is the weird part. I actually have respect for true conservatives, people who have respect for institutions. Because that's what conservatism used to be. You didn't want wild change. You believed in institutions. You know, kind of like stodgy old grandpa stuff. And there's something to be said for that. There's something to be said to slow down radical changes. It's now they're the radical change. And it's really scary stuff. It's angry. You know, conservatism used to be about, you know, bringing things together, uniting us, you know, honoring the flag and the country. And now it's about hatred and anger. It's about tearing us apart. We're going to have a national divorce. It's not even about truth anymore. And this is one of those things where I keep coming back to, we need to get away from the red hats and the blue hats. And I don't know that that's possible, because, you know, you get into these social media things, and I'll throw something out just to see what each side will, you know, where the polls are on each side. And there doesn't seem to be any way to go forward. And I look at this thing in East Palestine. This should be that thing that goes, we can fix this. The common ground here is there is a community that's screwed. There are workers who are going to lose jobs and incomes and people who are going to go bankrupt because of this. There should be a way to make these people whole. There should be legislation to help fix the damage, hold people accountable, help the folks who are harmed. But do you think that's going to happen? No. Right-wing media has moved on from this, because now it's getting into, well, we got to do something. And these are people who don't believe in government. These are people who tell you constantly government can't, shouldn't, and won't do anything. So why do you think that they're going to come together and say, yeah, maybe we should regulate these railroad companies, because clearly they're not policing themselves. I mean, think of how stupid that mentality is. Corporate America, they'll police themselves. You know, they'll do what's in their best interest. Think about it this way. Let's imagine I'm a state rep and I go, you know what, we're going to do away with all policemen with radar guns. No more policemen enforcing traffic laws. No more cops. We're going to just let people police themselves. People are just going to, you know, they're going to do what's in their best interest. How fast do you think people would be going up and down the highways? Let me put it this way. How fast would you be going? Because I know how fast I'd be going. My Jeep says it does 120 miles an hour. I'd like to test that. My wife's charger says it does 160. I would.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk from Muskego to Pewaukee. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
CBS News special report in South Carolina.
Verdict guilty, signed by the forelady.
Disgraced lawyer Alec Murdoch is found guilty on all counts in the 2021 shooting deaths of his wife Maggie and son Paul near dog kennels on their rural property. CBS's Nikki Batiste is at the courthouse in Walterboro, South Carolina.
The reaction around here was shock. Everyone started running to the courtroom and we heard there was a verdict. After just 3 hours of deliberations, there were five women and seven men on this jury. I've been watching Alec Murdoch as the verdict has been read and he's had virtually no reaction at all. He looked down at the ground a little bit. I'm also watching his surviving son, Buster Murdoch, who testified for the defense. He also is just looking straight ahead.
Alec Murdoch, who is 54 years old, faces 30 years to life in prison without parole when he is sentenced. He also faces about 100 other charges ranging from theft to insurance fraud. CBS News Special Report, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
The Shaw 101 FM, Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matinair. Here's what you need to know. Wisconsin taxpayers could be on the hook for nearly $2.5 million after a Dane County judge ordered Republican Assembly Speaker Robin Voss to pay legal fees to American Oversight. The Washington-based group successfully sued to get records from former Justice Michael Gableman's probe into alleged fraud in the 2020 presidential election. Meanwhile, Gableman has billed taxpayers over $500,000 for his review, which ultimately found no proof of voter fraud. Prices remain high for nearly everything. The U.S. Department of Agriculture found January food prices were 10% higher than at the same time last year. Eggs are among the items that have gone up the most, due in large part to a highly contagious avian flu. Egg prices are 70% higher than in 2022, and a dozen grade A large eggs are double what they cost you last year. I'm Jane Matinair. This is Civic Media News.
The Civic Media team would like to say congratulations. More than 200 Wisconsin businesses and nonprofits are receiving a free advertising campaign through our one-day $1 million advertising giveaway. If you missed out, our local sales team would still love to help you with your own campaign. Go to civicmedia.us and click on the sponsorship tab. Again, civicmedia.us and sponsorship. New and still growing. Advertise today with a Civic Media network of radio stations.
Suddenly, my quarterback is the number one trending topic. Why, you might ask, is Aaron Rodgers trending on Twitter? He's out this game. He's got COVID-19. And to my perception, he freaking lied to us, man. I'm very frustrated that he is not eligible to play this Sunday, especially when you find out your quarterback is a half a Trumpster. And he claims, I'm not a flat earther, I'm not an anti-vaxxer. I just play one in the NFL. That pisses me off, man. I was going to bet on that team. Maybe. New time, 3 to 6 p.m. and Dom.
This is Pat Greitlow from Up North News Radio. On the air, online, or on demand, make it a point to catch the first word on Wisconsin news, sports, and more weekday mornings from 6 to 8 all across the stations of the Civic Media Radio Network.
Monday morning at 8, don't miss Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring legendary Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Football, life, and fun.
Earl, you've been driving a Yugo. They just gave you a brand new Ferrari with turbo boost. So enjoy it, brother.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Monday morning at 8 on The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK.
Their employees. Yes, that's a corporate claim that executives have an inalienable right to endanger workers. This is Jim Hightower saying, sure enough, bowing to the corporate powers, Ohio lawmakers rejected the safety bill. And that, boys and girls, is why train catastrophes keep happening.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So remember, the people who tell you how much they love the Constitution, love them some Constitution. In fact, they're the folks who carry it around in their pocket. Now, as I've said before, I question whether they've actually, I don't know, cracked it open once or twice. But I look at Florida. There's a state senator there who is, he's proposing a piece of legislation that says if you write anything about Governor Ron DeSantis, anything at all, you bloggers, you're going to have to register with the state. And if you don't, we're going to fine you. We're going to fine you $25 a day up to $2,500 per story. And you go, but I thought you were the First Amendment people. I thought you were the Constitution. Never mind. It's all a facade. And again, this comes on the heels of Uncle Rupert coming out with the bumper sticker of the ages. It's not about red or blue. It's about green. And we now know what our entire media culture has been about. It's not about truth or justice or even, dare I say, fair and balanced. It's about money. And how do we claim that back? That should be the question for every working person in this country. That's why I've asked Milo Vasella to come talk with us. Milo is the co-founder of the Media and Democracy Project, their website, mediaanddemocracyproject.org. Milo, thanks for taking time for us.
Absolutely, Rick. Great to be here.
So I'm looking at, you know, this thing with Rupert Murdoch, I'm looking at with this ridiculousness in Florida. I'm in this place where big money owns virtually everything we see, hear, and read, and they want to consolidate that power even more and take it away from the hands of we the people. This is a moment where we should be fighting for our news and for our information, especially now, I think.
Absolutely. Obviously, what we're dealing with right now is the consequence of a whole bunch of legislative decisions for the past 30 years. Allowed the gutting of diversification of media ownership and promoting consolidation. Basically, the big fish are getting bigger, and the roadblocks to getting bigger are being removed actually at an accelerating pace. So that's where we have big telecom companies, we have Comcast owning television stations, broadcasting, movie rights, and then we have an oligarch who's obviously does not have the interest of the American people at heart, hijacking that system and creating a giant ecosystem of right-wing propaganda. Rupert.
No, I mean, the fact that he was honest, I give him credit. And this is what happens usually when people go into those places where they have to put their hand on the Bible and swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So help them being guilty of perjury. They're going to tell the truth because they don't want to end up in jail. And he was honest. It's not about red or blue. It's not about, conservatism or liberalism or democracy. It's about how much money I can put in my pocket. That's what it's about to them. And this tells me that this isn't something we should have in the hands of one or two or three people. This is something that should be at the local level, at the community level. And the problem is, and you pointed it out, this has been a red and blue problem that they've allowed this to happen. And we've got to break that back up.
Absolutely. I think the first thing is having conversations like we're having today, which is recognizing that we don't just turn on the TV or turn on the radio or download something on the internet and it just happens. There's a whole bunch of legislation that goes on and political decision and corporate influence that has the ultimate determinant of what we actually see.
Yeah. Now, everybody I talk to on the left says, we need to go back to the fairness doctrine. That ain't happening, is it?
Absolutely not. Technology has changed. Technology is actually at the root of a lot of what's happened. Is there an upheaval with the switch to the internet, and the regulations to regulate information are old. And so absolutely, fairness doctrine applies specifically to broadcast television and our radio waves. But if you think about the amount of information that's being put through cable television, satellite, none of those are susceptible to the fairness doctrine. So agreed. That's false hope. So people better wake up, get up to date, and let's start thinking forward.
Yeah. Now we move forward to the Clinton era where, you know, media consolidation was allowed to happen at a larger scale. The telecom bill of 96 that allowed, you know, people to own more and more media in individual markets. That can't be broken up either, can it?
At this point, no. But unfortunately, we can do some things to stem the tide of the consolidation. I think one of the more infamous examples of consolidation is on television. There's a group called the Sinclair Broadcasting Group, owns 190 plus local television stations. It actually does have a political agenda. It actually ran a Donald Trump basically promo video before the 20 2016 election. It also had editorial content by Boris Epstein, who ultimately has gone on to work with Steve Bannon. And basically what they've done is they have bought local television stations, hired local anchors, but injected a lot of corporate influence into what appears to be local content, but from a corporate and to some extent a right-wing vantage point.
Yeah.
And so the challenge is right now there are very few limitations to ownership of that scale. And there, the FCC, our Federal Communications Commission of We the People, actually has the power to, number one, stem the accelerated consolidation, and two, could actually have the power to roll back some of the consolidation that's taken place.
Yeah, see, I think we should be breaking a lot of these conglomerates up, not just in media, but in, you know, in meat production and cereal production and railroads and you name it, because we've allowed this mass consolidation for far too long. And we no longer have a competitive economy, in my view. We've got a bunch of our own oligarchs and our captains of industry who control so much of every aspect of our life. But that takes people who are willing to do this. And I look at right now the fight at to get this woman on the FCC as the chair of the FCC, this Gigi Sohn. Any thoughts on her?
Absolutely. Great question. So just for those folks, just to catch up to speed, civics that that we all haven't necessarily remembered from high school, the way our Federal Communications Commission is structured, it's supposed to be for the benefit of the American people to regulate telecommunications. It is structured in the way that there is a five-person commission. The staggering of the seating of those commissioners is alternating every 2 to 4 years so that a single president cannot wholesale put all of their folks on that commission and make it a hyper-partisan organization. So there is an intention to seat people every 2 years and have them come off cycle. It has been at a deadlock 2-2, somewhat, I'll call it, neutered state, because it can't make big decisions when it's neutered at 2-2, since President Biden took over. He nominated someone in October in 2021 who's extraordinarily capable, a lifelong advocate for rural broadband, diversification of media, and there has been a massive opposition to her, a kind of coalition of evil, if I may, in terms of media, of big telecom, Rupert Murdoch, media oligarchs, and some front organizations that look like they're speaking for the people, but really aren't.
Now, this is, again, you know, while it's neutered, to use your words, who benefits from this in this moment?
Absolutely. It's second best to having what we had under the Republican-led FCC of Ajit Pai. Basically, it was basically big telecom at the trough for the entire Trump administration. And now we have a neutered FCC that can't regulate what it needs to regulate and even roll back some of what the Ajit Pai regulations were about media ownership. There's been more consolidation because of things that took place during the Trump-dominant FCC that we can't even roll back to where we were before the Trump administration.
No, there were some horrible stuff during that. I mean, the end of net neutrality being one of them. I search for something on the internet and I get 15 other things that's not even what I wanted. It's again, because they paid for it. And again, it goes back to that Murdoch frame, doesn't it? It's not about red or blue. It's about green. It's always about the money, isn't it?
It absolutely is a major, major factor. I would, my own personal consideration, I think that Rupert Murdoch actually has interests even more nefarious than green. I think he's recognized that there is political and geopolitical power in owning media. Just as he has run the New York Post at a loss in New York City, it's kind of the lowbrow Fox, or the lowbrow, I call it, Wall Street Journal in New York City. He ran that at a loss for decades because it gives him political power in New York City politics and can reach certain voters and influence certain people with his right-wing propaganda.
Now,
so it is
though,
money,
yeah,
and
but
it is power.
Ultimately, that comes back down to green. He's making money somewhere. And this is where, again, you could go back to the Powell memo of the early 70s of the investments that they're making in media to change hearts and minds. And look, they've done, give them credit, they've done a masterful job. They had a playbook. They executed. Like, you know, I coached football. You give me that playbook, they executed it perfectly. And the folks on the left didn't. They didn't even respond because there isn't a functional left media in this country to come anywhere near the kind of money and influence that the right has built.
Absolutely. You nailed it. I look at it as several points. I'll just run them off one. I know you know this completely, and as do all of your listeners. It is an absolute lie that there is liberal media. It is a micro fraction of the amount of information that's being created. So that's one thing we think of, that there's no such thing as liberal media. The collapse of local journalism. It used to be that if you were in a town, you could get some journalists together and actually put a paper together with the ad revenue. Everybody in the town needed to sell a car, sell their house, that sort of thing. And they'd go to the local paper. Remember classifieds in the paper? That's where everything was sold. So the newspaper would get a cut of all the commerce. But with the advent of the internet, Craigslist and others, Amazon, all the revenue that used to go to support journalism vanished. So that's where we've got these news deserts. So technological shifts have forced us to come to reckon with that it's time to build media. And as you said, Democrats, progressives, even straight up pro-democracy folks haven't recognized that you have to build media, and it's not just going to happen by itself. And then just we were talking about this 30 years of deregulation, under-regulation, and also decisions that favor corporations. Tax breaks, policies that give money to big telecom to put broadband. When they don't deliver, they still get the money. And then the big thing that we've talked a little bit about is the right wing has invested heavily in messaging media.
Yeah, it's amazing. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Milo Vasilo. He is the co-founder of the Media and Democracy Project, mediaanddemocracyproject.org, the website. You can take a look. We'll get links out on social media so you can take a look at that. I do want to push a frame out here because I keep being told it's because it is about green, and it's what the people want. The people want the Fox. They want the OAN. They want the conspiracy stuff. They want the extreme stuff. That's what sells. That's what's saleable. You give the people what they want. Do you agree with that?
Not at all. It's pretty clear the formula of how right-wing media operates. It does something that true journalism, true neutral content doesn't do. It creates a community that doesn't trust outside and shuts people off from consuming other information. Don't trust anyone else. Trust us. It's also a very addictive content. They use propaganda techniques, and now it's beginning to come clear of how what they do in terms of getting people's base emotions, get people riled up, make them fearful, make them afraid. I've got family, your neck of the woods in Pennsylvania, and when they call me, I'm in New York City, and they wonder if I was threatened on the subway every day I go to work. They are living in what I call an unreality because of the disinformation that's piped into their brains. So they are being manipulated to be scared, to be angry, to be untrusting of other Americans and the other information that's out there. So it's really dangerous and addictive and radicalizing.
No, you're absolutely right. They do a masterful job of slicing and dicing and pitting us against each other and then hating and distrusting. And I look at, you know, that Marjorie Greene from Georgia. We need a national divorce because we're tired of other people, which is weird. But again, it fits into that frame, doesn't it?
Absolutely. It keys in on a lot of people's deep-seated emotion. There still is a lot of animosity. There is a lot of racism still in parts of this country. And they know how to push the right buttons that without saying certain words, they trigger certain emotions.
Oh, boy,
absolutely.
They do. So what's the way forward here then? Because, you know, we've talked about cable news. We've talked about, you know, newspapers. We've talked about, television. Radio. We haven't talked about the internet, though, where most of the people I know do get their news. Is there a way to fix this? I've had some people who said, "Well, we've got to deal with Section 230. There's got to be some." Is there a way of? Here's my fear. My fear is nothing's true, and how can anything be true if everything's false? And there are no known truths. There's no. We've been trained to distrust everything. And that, to me, that's to the benefit of the handful of folks at the top who control all the power and the wealth. The more we distrust each other, the more we can't agree on anything, the easier it is to divide and conquer us. So is there a way forward on these platforms and the internet in particular?
Absolutely. Got a couple of thoughts. Having learned, especially since Russia's invasion of Ukraine, how Russian propaganda works, it's fascinating to learn how skilled propagandists use the term "nothing is true." Nothing is real. Everything is possible. That's part of how Russian propaganda has sought to create such a population right now that can be so easily led and misled into an unreality of their own. And unfortunately, that's the side effect of the Marjorie Taylor Greens, the right-wing disinformation ecosystem, is it doesn't just brainwash the people there. It's the people that are even influenced who aren't direct consumers because they're getting other information that is just so unreal. It challenges your foundations of what the heck is actually true. So the way we think about this, and we're an action-oriented group, so thanks for having me chat with about these media issues, but we are specifically interested in what the heck can we do. That's our mantra. What we can do about media issues. And so number one, we've asked folks to call your U.S. senators. It doesn't seem like a lot, but it actually nudges. They count who's calling about what issues. So we're asking people to call the switchboard in D.C. You can even call now. The switchboard operator is there 24 hours a day, and you can leave a voicemail on the senator's phone. And I think it's 202-224-3121, and tell them to get forward and get our FCC back operational for the people and get Gigi Sohn confirmed so we can have an operational FCC. That's action one. Action two is local. It turns out that investing in your local community by subscribing to a local paper, if you've got one, is actually an action that supports your community and supports your democracy and supports your local information system. It turns out local journalists are more trustworthy. If you see that person at the county fair who's telling the report about what's going on about this infrastructure bill, you're going to be more likely to trust them than somebody who just pops up on your TV on your evening news. So we look at subscriptions to your local paper are a form of investment in your information ecosystem at home. So that's one we've got. We've got on our website a list. It turns out the right-wing folks and some other folks have scrambled people's brains by creating fake junk websites. And there's no way to stop that. It'll make it sound like it's really real. The Washington Times Post Gazette. That sounds real. It's got a good font that looks like a newspaper. It has a headline from today about Joe Biden. But when you click through it, it's really just, it's called pink slime in that it's non-nutritive blech. But it distracts folks. So it's a little hard sometimes, even if you're motivated. And if I gently nudge some of your listeners to kind of think about, what are my local papers? You can go to our website. We don't have any skin in the game. We're just doing it as a public service to get people to think local subscribing to your local paper, help your local journalists, and helps your community. And that's an action that we can take slow and steady.
Good stuff. Milo, I appreciate the time. Keep up the great work. I hope you'll come back and talk to us again down the road.
I'd love to. Let's get on the phone and call Gigi. Call our senators. Get Gigi on the call.
There you go. Good stuff.
Okay.
Milo Vassallo, he is the co-founder of the Media and Democracy Project, mediaanddemocracyproject.org, the website. Highly suggest taking a look at it. And like he said, subscribe to your local newspaper. That little action can do so much. Quick break, right back with your thoughts. Stick around. Listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1807. That was the day that President Thomas Jefferson signed legislation outlawing the transatlantic slave trade from bringing enslaved Africans to the United States. At the drafting of the U.S. Constitution, the authors had decided to revisit the question of slavery after two decades. During those two decades, the dedicated work of abolitionists put pressure on Congress to act against the barbaric transatlantic trade. Abolitionists in Great Britain also passed a law prohibiting the trade that same year. The U.S. law went into effect on January 1st of 1808. When the law was passed, 1 million enslaved people lived in the United States. The act, however, did not release them from bondage. In fact, the Western spread of the cotton economy after the Louisiana Purchase ensured that slavery would become even more entrenched. The 1807 Act also did not fully end the transatlantic trade. The law did not include adequate enforcement mechanisms. Historians estimate that illegal smugglers brought in as many as 250,000 more enslaved Africans to the United States after the Prohibition was passed. In 1810, President James Madison spoke to Congress about the problem, saying, "It appears that American citizens are instrumental in carrying on a traffic in enslaved Africans, equally in violation of the laws of humanity and in defiance of those of their own country." It would become more than half a century until the question of slave labor in the United States was finally answered by a bloody civil war. From 1525 to 1866, the best estimates of historians is that 12.5 million Africans were brought to the Americas, and nearly 2 million of them died on the Middle Passage. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, therickssmithshow.com. So you remember when we were on our Working Class Heroes radio tour, we met up with Dana Nessel. She was the Attorney General in Michigan. And I'll tell you, not a very big woman, but wow, one tough woman. I saw a headline today over at NBC News. The headline was Michigan's Attorney General targeted by armed man. And you read the first line of the story. Michigan's Attorney General Dana Nessel was targeted last month by a heavily armed man who threatened injury and death to Jewish members of the Senate of the state government, NBC reports. And I'm going, hold on a second. That's not quite the headline. That's not the urgency that I would expect. More like crazy right-winger stalks with an arsenal stalks AG. That's more like it. This is Michigan we're talking about. And, it's amazing. Even in the places where, the right wing doesn't own the media, they're always tapping it down. There's this both sides-ism, and they're always tapping it down because we don't want to look too biased. So we've got to go over the top to make it look like we're not holding anyone really accountable on that side. It's really quite amazing to me. But I just saw that. I'm going, this is the kind of stuff that people have to filter through. Just incredible. Real quick, I wanted to comment on this email that Janice sent me. She sent me an email about the drag shows and how it's amazing that, so many of these guys, have dressed up in drag shows. But she goes, everyone's focused on the drag queens dressing up. How come no one's talking about the children that we sexualize in these TV shows? And this is a really good question, because, look, it's interesting to me that Dolly Parton, the quote that comes out now that Dolly Parton, said if she had at one point, if she hadn't been a girl, she'd have been a drag queen, Tennessee's favorite daughter. And yet Tennessee is moving full on tilt into this. You've had, all kinds of people throughout the years. I read an article that pointed out that Milton Berle, Mr. Television himself, used to dress up in drag all the time on TV during the 1950s. And then it reminded me going, well, wait a second. Shakespeare, for freaking sake, it was all men dressed up like women. Did I miss something? So then, old Shakespeare couldn't be done in Tennessee. Well, Shakespeare wouldn't go to Tennessee anyway. But it's just one of these things where you start going, think about the ramifications of the acts. And then as Janice highlights, going, if you're really concerned about the children, if you really care about the children, how about these crazy parents who do these things to these 4 and 5 year olds? JonBenet Ramsey still sticks into my head. As she was 5 or 6 looking like 30 because they'd slap all this makeup on her and do all this stuff. It was crazy. Crazy what they would do to these kids and what they do to these. It just is what it is. It's one of those things that you go, if you're going to be crazy and and stop all the sexualizing and stuff, maybe start with the parents too. But again, this is my problem when you have government who overreaches and is now hyper focused on punishing as opposed to legislating. This is one of those things where you go, at some point we just have to figure out how to make sure that we call out the nuts. And I look at Tennessee, I look at these places. It really is just flipping nuts. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.